Good evening, everybody. I'm still battling, I think, this COVID thing. It's been like 3 weeks ago, but I can't kick it. I don't think I'm contagious, but I'm just days like today. I'm just struggling, so I apologize for that, but that's just what it is. All right, so walk through the mass. Okay, so I'm not sure what you're hoping for or wanting to know. I'll give you, the best I can offer, and maybe the best thing we can do is for you, if you have questions or concerns or whatever, that you can bring them up, and then we can maybe deal with them. But I just want to say from the outset, this is so complicated. The rite or the liturgy is, liturgy being work of the people. And what does that mean? Is it, for some people, work of the people meant building a statue or something and saying, here you go. What I understand by work of the people is that this is what we do. And maybe I'm outside of the norm of that somehow this is all about clergy and popes and cardinals and bishops and whatnot. No, it's about us. I'm identifying with you. I see myself as part of you who has been called, and I think that's really fairly true of any of us. If you've been called to marriage, called to single life, called to what I do for a living, you're responding to a call. But when we get inside a building like this with an expectation, what can happen, therefore, is liturgy, is the work of us. And the work of us is to do what we were made to do, which is to give God thanks. So I think that's just a foundational principle. So like I said, this whole thing is complicated, but I need to also let you all know I live in the 4th century. And what I mean by that is that's when what we do now happened. So we think of Christ and Christ born, whenever, roughly 08 AD or 3 AD or whatever, dying somewhere around 30, 33 AD. And then we just think that we've been doing this ever since. And that's absolutely not the case. It was punishable by death until 313 to be Christian. So if you were a Christian in that 300-year period, there was a very good chance you were just going to be killed. No questions asked. And it wasn't until 313 and Edict of Milan and Constantine, who he and his mom are this incredible crew that did what they did to help us get to where we are now. But in 313 and moving forward is when we had to decide on, now we can publicly worship. All right, so we're so used to publicly worshiping that we don't even think about it. Well, just like we've always, and some of you are old enough to remember pre-Vatican II, and I should be old enough to remember, but I don't. I don't remember Latin Mass. I don't remember any of that. But, you know, for the most part, we've been doing what we've been doing as long as we can remember. Pretty much structurally exactly the same. But that wasn't the case. It was not the case in 313. And, you know, one of the first things they had to decide on was, where are we going to publicly meet? And what they decided on, which was, you know, once again, so this is a Roman church. It's a Roman thing. And what they decided on was to meet in a basilica. Okay, so when we think of basilicas, what does that mean? It's exactly like this, all right? So an area of the church that is where you're seated right now, although back in the good old days where I belong, no pews. Pews didn't exist. It was a standing affair. In fact, it's still on the books, and you can disagree with me or dislike me, but you can, that during the season of Easter, you do not kneel. That's still on the books. We don't do that because we are sheep, right? And we just fall back into what we do. But the church was a standing, moving event. Okay, so where the church met was in a building like this, where a large area like you're seated in, called the nave, where I'm at up here, not defined like it used to be, and so you, some of you are old enough to remember when this area was fenced off, called the sanctuary. You merely baptized were not allowed up here, which is crazy and stupid, but that's basically the way it was done. And then we are so lucky here in our parish that this area beyond the font is called the narthex, which is where people would gather. And once again, I live in the fourth century. So, and I want to redo this again. It was interrupted by COVID. But what I would like for us to do again, and so you're getting the first word on this, is what used to happen was that the people, and there was, remember, no matter how large of a city you were in the fourth century, there was just one church. So what would happen was the people would gather, and sometimes it was in a narthex-type area like we have, or they gathered outside of the church, and they waited till the bishop showed up, because it's, once again, one church, one service per Sunday, and that was all there was one Sunday service. They waited for the bishop to show up, and then everybody came in together. I'd like to do that with us again, where we gather in the narthex, and we'd be, you know, we're totally protected from the weather and from everything else. Oh my goodness, a service dog, right? Yay! I don't know if I'll pet him later if it's okay. Oh, how beautiful. That's a gorgeous animal. But we would all gather and come in together. And here's why I say that. The reason I say it is two P words. The reason why we do what we do is we're a people on pilgrimage. And I was just reading the second, I think it's the second Tuesday in the Liturgy of the Hours, but this refrain or antiphon has always stuck with me. When will I come to the end of my pilgrimage and enter the presence of God? Pilgrimage. You know, it's we've inherited this from our Jewish brothers and sisters, that the most important thing they could do was to go from wherever they were, and most of the folks were rural, and to come to Jerusalem, a town of about 50,000 in the early days, and it would swell to 300,000 or however many to come to the temple, once again, a space of worship. And they would do it several times a year, but it was just part of the rhythm of life, which when we talk about liturgy, we talk about rhythm. You think about the day. You get up in the morning, and once again, as a former monk and as a former, person that tries to live the life, you pray at certain times of the day, morning, noon, evening, night. And it's just part of the rhythm of the day. But in order to get there, you have to get there. You have to move. It's very much a physical, a pilgrimage, once again, is a movement. And it's just actually who we are. It's who we are as people, is to just think about even the things that you do that are incredibly important to you, that are part of your year. You know, for some people, going to Okoboji for the soccer tournament in June is pilgrimage. It's important. It's going to Arnold's Park. It's playing soccer. It's staying at Fillingworth or wherever you might be. But it's been a part of your life for years and years and years. I would like to think that that's the same thing about what we do here. And so pilgrimage. Yes, it's going to a destination with enthusiasm and with a purpose. But at the same time, the other P word that I'm talking about is procession. All right? So there are three processions that are part of what we do whenever we gather together here. So one can ask the question, when does Mass or the liturgy begin? And I would say to you, it's as soon as you and your family decide to get in the car and come. It's not about waiting for the servers and the priests and the music to fire up to begin. It's when you decide to come here, because once again, it's pilgrimage. It's coming to a place to do a religious thing, but really, more importantly, it's to come and respond to the invitation of God. And you can think about all the invitations of God. And probably for me, one of the most fundamental ones is the burning bush story with Moses, where God is so desperate, almost, is so excited about making himself known to Moses that this out of this world thing is happening. And Moses has no option but to explore, but to investigate, and what happens to him. It's what happens to each of us when we encounter God in that type of deep way, where we're able to take off our shoes and bask in holy ground and experience the fact that that's how much God loves us. You know, we don't see that here because we're so used to, it's wooden pews and tile floors, marble ambo and altar, very familiar. All of it is so familiar that we just can't see sometimes the fact that this is the same God that's reaching out to Moses is reaching out to us. Even though we do come, and sometimes we come just purely out of duty or obligation or whatever, when really what's happening is God is beckoning us to meet him, to come and see, like Jesus says in John's gospel. You want to figure this out? Come and see. So as I mentioned, we have these three processions, and the first one begins when we come in. And like I mentioned before, what I'd like for us to do down the road and for it to be permanent, and you may disagree and I may get pushback and whatever might happen, it's okay. But for all of us to gather in the narthex and you guys can mingle and visit and catch up and inform each other about how your week is and how you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And then with, you know, we'll have to do some work with musicians and whatnot. And then we do Psalm 43, which says, I will go up to the altar of God. And we all come in together. All of us. It's a procession. It's how this thing was designed. And we come in together. I know it's going to be a real problem for folks that are used to, and maybe this is something that you might have to organize or rethink about for yourself, is I get to come in here and kneel down and pray for 10 minutes beforehand. This is my 10 minutes that I get to spend in church with God. Well, there's 6 other days to do that as well. You can come in here anytime you want. The doors are outside of after we're done with Mass. They're open early in the morning. It's open all day long. You can come in here and do the same thing. But that's what we're used to doing, isn't it? That's what we were taught when we were kids, is you come in here. And I remember getting boxed around by my mom when I wasn't kneeling and praying when we got to church early. But that's just what we did. It's just we never thought about anything else. I'm asking us to consider that really who we are and what we do is as a people, we gather and we come in together as a body and do the work of the people. That's the liturgy. That's really what, you know, we call it the Mass, and Mass is a based on Misa, Ita Misa Est, which is the Mass is over, and Misa means get the hell out of here. It means go, and that's how do you go when you're coming. So I'm just asking you to consider, and we'll have. It's, what, October right now, October 4th. Thank you, St. Francis, for your life and your, amazing story. So we've got 2 months or so to figure out if this is what we want to do. All right, so the first procession, we come in. And you know where that ends? We have this opening prayer, is what it's called. It's really a collect. And what it is every time we are moving, when that movement comes to an end, we have a prayer to the Father, to the Trinity, to the Trinity. I mean, it's what really defines us. And you've heard me talk about this for the last couple of weekends. And so after everybody is in place, and once again, remember that there weren't pews before. This was a standing event. And has anybody been to Constantinople? Has anybody been to Hagia Sophia besides me? Enormous church, five times bigger than this. No pews, nothing. When the Russians were shopping for a religion, which is exactly what they were doing, shopping, literally shopping for a religion, they showed up at Hagia Sophia in Constantinople. Istanbul, I guess, I should have said Istanbul, or Byzantium. The Russians experienced this liturgy and said, we did not know if we were on heaven or on earth. I mean, that's really what's supposed to be happening here, is that it becomes so overwhelming that you're not sure where you are. Because that's what we're doing. We're meeting, once again, like Moses, we're meeting God in a place, in a predictable place in this case. But what happens here becomes so overwhelming and so engaging that we cannot help ourselves, and we do the Homer Simpson, which I know it doesn't make sense, but it's what people do when they rejoice, is woohoo, which is alleluia, right? We can't help ourselves. It's whenever Nebraska may ever again score a touchdown. And you just can't help yourself. That's ideally what's happening here, but we get so reserved about what's proper and what's... I wish you all would have been here this morning with the kids' mass we had. I forget which age group it was, like 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, and their grandparents here in church this morning. And it was just joyful. And one of the traditions we have here is when we do the Celtic Alleluias is, I don't know how it started, but it's what we do. Alleluia. Yeah, see, you know what to do. I don't know how that started, but it's just natural. It's what we do, and it's how we really respond when we aren't white Americans anymore. And it's beautiful, and that's one of the things I love about us here is it used to be the 11:30 Mass, but now it's had to roll back to 9:30. But don't you love our Africans that are here and they proudly wear their cool things that I couldn't get away with? And I love hearing them. And there's this little girl, she's like this tall, about this broad, and she's a bowling ball. And she just runs through and she's joyful. And then to listen to their... talking to each other in French, because most of them are French Africans. I love that about who we are. I love it that we can welcome them because they're, once again, us. It's us. It's the work of the people, and they're part of us. All right, I got distracted, and I apologize. All right, second procession. When is that, you suppose? When the gifts are processed, are brought up. Once again, this used to be everybody. Back in the 4th century, what people did was, in Hagia Sophia, in Istanbul, Constantinople, there was a totally different part of the building that was outside of the church. It's got a fancy name, Skelephalakion, And in the scaphalakion, it was all the gifts the people brought, which could be animals, could be bread, could be eggs, could be milk, could be wine, could be... They brought and all of this produce and animals, et cetera, then were set aside. But it was a procession, once again. The gifts are being brought forth. All right, and so in part of the Mass, if you, and there's really no reason why we do this anymore, after after the priest is done blessing the bread and the wine, then you notice that he goes over to the server and washes his hands. That has no purpose anymore. That the reason why it existed before is because this guy was handling sheep and goats and pigs and whatever else. Yeah, we better clean up. But it's become this spiritualized moment. And we still do it, but there isn't, this is how these things hang on. All right, so the second procession. Once again, you all take part of this, even though you may not be. When you are putting your cash or whatever into the basket, which I encourage you to do, by the way, that is brought forward along with the bread and the wine, of course, which will become our sacrament. So that's the second procession. Third procession, obviously communion, right? And here's, and once again, it's okay. You come here, but you're coming to the altar. This is the most important piece of furniture in this building. And I could probably get in arguments with others saying, no, it's the tabernacle. No, it's not. It's the table. It's the altar. And we come to the altar. One of the things I don't understand, and here I'm going to get myself in trouble again, is why people would refuse themselves from coming to the table. Coming to, what do we say right before we come here? Lord, I'm not worthy, right? None of us is. Absolutely none of us is. But how many times, if you decide to refuse yourself, what are you saying is that, I'm bigger than God. I will not let God forgive me. I'm not worthy. Of course, none of us are. But when we make that decision to say and refuse ourselves to do what and to be exposed to the same Christ that goes out of his way to welcome sinners. Is that not the same Christ we're meeting here? Is it not the same Christ that welcomed, and I know there were some issues in earlier in the week in the gospel with Jesus and the Samaritans, but this is Jesus at the same time who has the parable of the Good Samaritan, who is well beyond. Do we believe that Christ in history and in the present and in the future is one that is forgiving? Don't you think that if you were to come to him, that that's exactly what he wants? I would think so. And I have to admit, I've probably given First Communion to 100 people. People that whether I was in Jamaica on a mission trip and they were not Catholic or whatever, but they came to communion, it's not my position to say, I need to scan something here. I need to figure out if you're actually a full-fledged Catholic in good standing. That's not my job. It's never my job. And And I know of folks that who are Catholics in good standing that refuse to come to enter the procession with everybody else who is a sinner, who is, you know, and this is not this is a standard Missouri Synod homily, is you're sinners and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm saying. Is the point of it isn't that we're sinners. The point of it is that we're forgiven. The point of it is that we're invited. The point of it is that we are reconciled through the blood of Christ and to experience that kind of forgiveness and love. And you can't do it if you don't come. All right, so we process when we gather. We process when we're bringing all of our gifts together, which, you know, I'm backtracking again. One of the biggest problems we have in our church is minimalism, where we just pare everything down to just kind of nuts and bolts, where it's really supposed to be this extravagant thing. And if you complain, perhaps, about church lasting an hour, I would like to take you back to where I live in the 4th century, which church was all day long. Let's go to Jerusalem. You started the liturgy in Jerusalem. You walked 7 miles to Bethlehem for the next part of the liturgy. Then you would walk 7 miles back. It took all day. And this wasn't just Jerusalem. The same thing in Constantinople, same thing in Rome. It was an all-day experience. And so, all right, getting back. Procession, we all come together. I hope we can agree on the fact that it's going to be to our benefit to meet out the narthex and all come in together. The gifts being brought up, which is us, once again. And after, I forgot to mention this, at the end of every procession is a collect, is a prayer. So we all come in, greeting, etc. Opening prayer, we sit, we listen. Gifts are brought up, prayer, collect, communion. We have a little interruption here where we do our parish prayer, but then there's also a collect at the end of that. And at the very end, we're asked to process again, except recess, right? And recessional. Go in peace. To love and serve the Lord. You know what? That's not in the books anymore. Ever since this new, God forgive me, don't let lightning strike me, this basically awful translation that we've got to use now, I still use the old dismissal because it's really what we're asked to do. Go in peace to love and serve the Lord, and I could also add, and each other, right? What's the bottom line here is to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind, which every single Jewish kid that is old enough to read knows that, Deuteronomy 6:5, and love your neighbor as yourself, Leviticus 19:18. That's just the bottom line here. And we come here Sunday after Sunday, some of you weekdays. I apologize. I fell asleep this afternoon and couldn't get going at 5:30. We come here time and time again to do what I think I said over the weekend, which is the most important thing that we need to do here, is which is not to fulfill an obligation, but more importantly, to remember. It's to remember who God is, how much he loves us, how much he wants us to be with him, how much he wants to forgive us for whatever shortcomings or mistakes we may have made, wants to feed us, right? Which is a big piece of what Mass is all about, is to be fed, the bread of life, the cup of salvation, is to remember that and to practice it. Because this is our future. Our future is in heaven. Our future is to be finally fulfilled in exactly how God has created us. He's gifted us with this life that most of us have had a long time or an ample time to celebrate and perhaps fail at, perhaps succeed at. But at some point, he wants us back, right? It's God, I wish I had left my Bible here from that wisdom reading that I shared last weekend or 2 weekends ago, that God does not despise anything that he has made. That's us. And that also that God has implanted within each of us his own spirit, which we remind ourselves when we walk by that font, which we were all baptized and buried with Christ in, we were buried with Christ so that we could also rise with Christ, and we sign ourselves with that holy water, hopefully to remind ourselves of that future that Romans 8 is so eloquent about. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. Nothing. We can try as hard as we want. It's just not going to change. Nothing can separate us. And in the end, God is calling us to be with him, and we get the opportunity and the joy, I hope, to come here on a Sunday and celebrate that. Not out of trying to placate God or trying to manipulate him or trying to... No, it's we've been called, right? And when we recognize that, we really, truly have a totally new and different outlook on why we're here is when we recognize that God has called us to be with him. He's called us to join him and to celebrate his love for us. And then hopefully extend that love to each other.